This is Women's Magazine on KPFA 94.1 FM in Berkeley and online at kpfa.org. In a little while, we'll come back to Starhawk, and I'll be asking her about her involvement in the struggle for justice in Palestine and also about her work with the permaculture movement. But now, let's turn to another type of women's spiritual practice. Sumbul Ali Karamali is the author of The Muslim Next Door, The Quran, The Media, and That Veil Thing. This short, thorough overview of Islam challenges media stereotypes by explaining what it means to live as a modern Muslim woman. Sumbul Ali Karamali has a law degree from the University of California, Davis, and an LLM in Islamic Law from the University of London School of Oriental and African Studies. She was recently in San Francisco for a speech at the Commonwealth Club, and she spoke with KPFA's Gabrielle Wilson.
Thank you for joining KPFA today, Ms. Sumbul Ali Karamali.
Well, thank you so much for having me on your show.
I'm speaking with the author of The Muslim Next Door. The subtitle is The Quran, The Media, and That Veil Thing. Where'd you get this title?
Well, first of all, the publisher chooses the title and the cover. But it comes from one of my chapter titles. The chapter on women is called The Status of Women in Islam, Marriage, Divorce, Polygamy, and That Veil Thing. And I wrote it that way because it seemed to me that that was how people often thought of it.
A lot of people look at the headscarf and they don't ask questions. Sometimes they get misinformation. I hope you can clear some of this up today. Could you tell us about the idea or the notion that the scarf represents some kind of oppression or so?
Sure. You know, when I wrote this book, when it first came out last year, I have a relative by marriage who heard me speak about it, mention it, and looked at it, and he said, "You mean you're a practicing Muslim?" And I could tell, this is someone who's known me for years, and I could tell that it was because I didn't wear a headscarf, because he had just thought of me as another American. The headscarf is such a visible identifier that sometimes people have trouble looking past it. On NPR once, I heard a school teacher saying that she had put a picture of a nun up in front of her high school class and asked the students, "What do you think? What are the words that come to mind?" And her students said, chaste, modest, holy. And then she put a picture of a woman in a Middle Eastern traditional headscarf and said to her students, "What are the words that come to mind?" And her students said, "Backward, oppressed, no rights." And so why this difference? First of all, in Islam, it's a personal choice whether to wear a headscarf or not. But for women who choose to wear a headscarf, there are all kinds of reasons they might do it.
And I read the book, so I want to get kind of nuanced here with this. Some of the women are educated. We have this stereotype here in this country, in the United States, that perhaps the scarf is a sign of oppression in uneducated women. However, women with advanced degrees are choosing to cover up. Isn't that correct?
That is correct. And it really just depends on a bunch of different reasons. First of all, let me just explain what the religion itself says, to give you background. The Quran has primarily two verses that are relevant to this issue, and one says men should be modest and women should be modest, and the other one says women should draw their clothing closer upon them. Now, in those days, women wore an ornamental headscarf that went down the back but didn't cover their necks or faces, and also in those days, the tunics often left their chests bare. And so this verse was saying, you know, take what you're wearing and draw it closer around you in modesty. So the question was, what constitutes modesty? And the early Islamic scholars had big debates on this. And most of them said women should cover their hair and leave only their hands, face, and feet showing. But some of them said, no, women don't have to cover their hair. They defined hands, face, and feet differently. Some said, you know, the hands actually means hands up to the elbow. Feet means feet up to mid-calf. They all agreed that everything from the knees up and the chest should be covered. But beyond that, they didn't. They all agreed that you had to be modest, but there were parameters within which you could make a choice.
You discuss in the book the way that, you know, people perceive you when you're your head is covered of the way in business, like perhaps, you know, a woman can be taken more seriously. She can come in, she's got her scarf on, and she can just mm-hmm. come in as an equal, and then there's no distractor there.
Mm-hmm. I've heard this from both women here in the United States, and also I've read about women in, say, Egypt. So, for example, in Egypt, there are more and more women going into the workforce, and many of them have started wearing a headscarf because they have found that they get harassed less when they do. And, you know, in a perfect world, they shouldn't be harassed no matter what they're wearing, but it's not a perfect world.
And then some, when they have their scarf on, don't want to do anything wrong while they're wearing their scarf. So it has a good effect on the other end.
Well, a friend of mine just recently told me this. We were talking about the headscarf, and she wears one and I don't. And she says, and of course we all agreed that we should be modest. And she said to me, you know, actually, you are maybe more modest if you look at it one way, because you're not conspicuous, whereas I'm conspicuous because I'm wearing this headscarf. And so she said, I don't wear it because of modesty. I wear it because it reminds me to do good things. It reminds me that I'm visible and that people know I'm a Muslim, and so I'd better do good things.
Which brings me to my next question regarding the media. You know, the visual images are just so powerful. And mm-hmm. I'd like to talk a little bit about how you mentioned that the coverage of Islam is sort of crisis-driven as opposed to, you know, other religions such as, say, Christianity or Judaism or whatever. There's a sort of a double standard at work here.
There is. I have a story that ties in the issue of women with the issue of the media, and that is a friend of mine's a sixth grade social studies teacher, and I went to talk to her class about Ramadan. And one little boy raised his hand and he said, I thought Muslim women had to be all covered up and couldn't go anywhere without their husbands or brothers and couldn't drive. So how did you get here?
Sixth graders have a way of being so blunt and honest.
They do. They do. And I said, you know what? You're thinking of Saudi women. There is only one Muslim country where women can't drive by law, and that's Saudi Arabia. And it was very telling because in our media, the Saudis are often portrayed as representative of all Muslims. And the Saudis are actually less than 2% of the Muslim world. And half the Muslim women in the world live in Indonesia, India, and Pakistan. And all three of those countries have had women as presidents or prime ministers.
And the United States has yet to have a woman president.
That's right. In fact, there have been 5 Muslim women who have been heads of state of Muslim countries in recent years. So that's something I'm quite proud of. And so the media, by only showing this very small segment, this very minute percentage of Muslim women who are oppressed, tends to universalize it. They're taking a specific image and universalizing it so that it becomes the primary image that people have. I grew up in the 70s, and people before the Iranian Revolution hadn't really heard that much of Islam. They didn't know any Muslims. After the 1979 Iranian Revolution, suddenly it was a lot of people's first impressions of Islam. It was the first time they had really heard of it, and it was not a good first impression. And since then, the media has always portrayed Islam and Muslims in terms of crisis. Until we can sort of get rid of this framework of Islam is the enemy, Islam is a hostile force, we're never really going to be able to discuss it as just another one of the world's religions.
People, if you're just joining us, we have been speaking with Sambul Ali Karamali, author of The Muslim Next Door, The Quran, The Media, and That Veil Thing. There's a Muslim next door to me. I live in Berkeley. And there's probably Muslims living next door all over the place in this country. And I think this book is a good source to sort of open up people's eyes to what they're probably already experiencing.
I hope so, because there are a lot of people who came to me and said, you know, all I'm hearing about is political crises. And I'd just like to know, what do Muslims do? What do you believe? How do you practice? It's difficult to understand abstract theology. If you read a news article, and even if they talk about Muslim beliefs and practices, it's hard to relate to it until you can talk to someone about how it plays out in their everyday lives. And that's what I wanted to do in the book, is describe the rules of Islam, describe the basis of Islamic law, and then describe how it played out in my life in an everyday American context.
And speaking of everyday American context, we have an overabundance of, I'll say, liquor stores in inner city communities, and they are quite often owned by immigrants from Yemen or even Palestine. Ironically, people fleeing oppression in Palestine come here and open up liquor stores against the tenets of their religion. So this is a sort of loaded question, but I think there is a double standard, because how many Christians go outside the tenets of Christianity, and how many other religions go outside the tenets of their faith and commit, certain violations, and nobody says a word?
There is a double standard in the media. The media has markers. And so when a Muslim is a criminal or even does something negative, the first thing you hear about is how they're Muslim. You hear about their relationship with their religion. And also, by focusing on the evil deeds of Muslims or whatever, you're ignoring all the other things that happen in the world. For example, the murder of the abortion doctor, Dr. Tiller.
Yes.
This was clearly for religious reasons.
He was a Christian.
Yes, his murderer was a Christian. He was very anti-abortion. His ex-wife said that his whole life was very centered on Christianity. So there's clearly a connection, and yet most of the news articles didn't explore it.
Thank you so much for clearing things up in your book. And it hit home in so many ways on a personal level. So thank you so much for this.
That was my goal.
If people want to get the book, they can go to the publisher's website, which is White Cloud Press. Is there any other place you know of?
Your local bookstore should carry it. Of course, it's online as well on Amazon. But I always encourage people to go to their local bookstores if they can. Widely available where books are available.
Okay, well, thank you for coming to KPFA, and we hope you'll be back.
Well, thank you so much.
Thanks to Gabrielle Wilson for allowing us to use her really interesting discussion with author Sumbul Ali Karamali. The book is The Muslim Next Door, The Quran, The Media, and That Veil Thing, and it's highly recommended for people who want to move beyond media stereotypes of Muslims. This is Women's Magazine on listener-sponsored KPFA Radio and online at kpfa.org.